Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
KL7R, KL7R, M0HBR, are you there, Mike?
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R, good to hear you, Bill. Been a week or two, over.
Yeah, here we are, Labor Day weekend. It's the 3rd of September, Sunday morning, 2006 here in central London. It's, I guess that makes it Saturday night in Juneau, and this is Solder Smoke 31. What's happening up there at KL7R?
I've been melting a little solder. I resurrected an old VTVM. I bought a VM on an HF swap and shop, a vacuum tube voltmeter for if you don't know what a VTVM is. It's like an FET or high impedance voltmeter that uses tube. Anyway, I had one back when, and I bought this thing from a guy for $10, and it got here, and it was a mess, and it wasn't what I thought I was getting. But I resurrected it and got it working, and it reads out really well. It's got a great big meter, and it's fast, and when I hitch it up to my RF probe, and put my RF probe on my 5-watt transmitter, I get 16 volts RMS right on the screen there. So you can't get more perfect than that. So I was happy. Even though it looked clunky, it works really well there, Bill. Over.
Excellent. Yeah, I think you said it was a heat kit. I had a heat kit, a kind of analog meter like that too. I'm not sure whether it had I think it had tubes in it. Yeah, I think it did. It was great. I really like the analog dial. It's much more useful than the digital readout sometimes. But mine was also messed up. And I kind of have a rule here, Mike. I like repairing the equipment and bringing a dead piece of radio gear back to life. But I draw the line when I start having to repair the test gear, and it starts getting really nasty. So if the test gear isn't working, well, I guess in terms of test gear, I'm an appliance operator. Go ahead.
Yeah, I actually enjoy building test gear. You know, we're kind of like two halves of a coin there. You enjoy analog. I enjoy analog. I also enjoy digital. I enjoy building test equipment, and you don't. So we kind of fill the spectrum there. I really enjoy building that stuff. I had out my ES signal generator and my power meter, and yeah, I've been having fun. Hey, you know the guy that, what do they call that? The drug radio? What do they call that thing? They talk about it. Over.
Yes, the famous super drug radio. It sounds illicit. And, you know, there's here in the UK, there's these super drug stores all over the place, and every time I drive past one or ride past one on the bus, I think of that project. And I've actually walked into a few of these places trying to buy one of these ridiculously low-priced chip-based radios, but I've never found one, I suspect. I don't think it's because there are large amounts of amateurs in my neighborhood going out buying these things up. I think I'm the only one. But, I've watched from time to time the discussions of how to modify those things. It looks like a lot of fun. Go ahead.
Was that Hans Summers that... It has a bunch of stuff on his site about the super drug radio.
I think Hans has it. He's got so much great stuff on that site. I really love that website, and I think that he was involved in the project. So there's probably some super drug. So you have to say super drug radio stuff in there. Not leave out the radio bit. People get the wrong impression. Go ahead.
Yes, illicit and all. Well, anyway, I was crawling around in, on Hans Summer site, and I know you mentioned QRSS, guys building QRSS receivers. That just got me interested again. So I decided to Hans Summers, the connection there is he has this, he just turned it off, a homebrew QRSS beacon that he put up, and it was junk box sort of. It's pretty impressive what he did with that the controller for this super slow speed transmitter. But anyway, it got me excited again, and so I fired up my K2 on 10.140. That's the frequency where they do QRSS, standard calling frequency, and I was listening up there, and I saw a signal, and so I joined the Knights QRSS mailing list, and again, I'd been on there before, but had no luck. But anyway, I got on there and I said, "What's this signal?" And guy came back to me from the Midwest. His call escapes me now, but a very nice fellow. He's really excited to get my picture of his signal. And so anyway, I was copying the QRSS, so then I decided to fire up my K1EL keyer that does QRSS into my K2, and so I put up a QRSS beacon, and at 100 milliwatts, I got signals back from two places in the United States and New Zealand and Australia. The guy in New Zealand, it was just like a perfect. I think I sent you the picture there. That was my call sign. It was just way out of the noise there, Bill. Over.
Oh, that is really cool. Yeah, I think we talked a little bit about this because I read Hans's article in Sprat on this, and I remember seeing he had pictures in there of his transmitter, and it was I guess we could say it was just beautifully ugly. And homebrewers out there will know what I mean. It was inspirationally ugly. And yeah, well, that's great. I did see the screenshot that you sent, and I guess we should put that up on maybe I'll put that up on the Gadgeteer blog, if you don't mind, so that our Solder Smoke listeners can take a look at what we're talking about. But yeah, that was really cool. And I the portion you sent me, I could see KL7, but then I couldn't see whether it was R or not, and I wasn't quite sure whether it was actually picked up all the way from Alaska to New Zealand. So yeah, really, really interesting. And the whole beacon thing, I just, there's something very alluring about beacons. And I used to leave one on when we were in the Azores, and when we were living in Virginia. And I wasn't QRSS. It was just a 10-meter beacon. I have a little 10-meter beacon transmitter here that I built, and just leave it on. I used to leave an email address and a message. And then it's sort of like message in the bottle with radio, and then I'd come back at the end of the day, and there'd be a few emails in there from guys who'd heard me out in Montana and other places. Great fun, and the QRSS thing makes it even cooler. Now, KL7R, QRSS, this is M0HBR.
It was fun, and I got the Larry WB3ANQ. He's in Pasadena. His son Todd N3TFM. They were really excited about seeing my signal and the fact that I could see Larry's signal, and so really cool. The ZL40L and a VK, I can't remember his call sign right now. Good stuff. I was really happy to be able to see him. I might have seen pieces of a signal once, but there's a really strong signal from WB3ANQ. He puts like a triangular wave up, and it's really easy to see in the waterfall, a slow speed waterfall. If you do a Google search for QRSS, there's pointers to software and the whole technology there. What you been up to, Bill? I you sent me a note.
everybody's going to get tired of hearing me talk about this 20-meter double sideband rig, but I moved it off the bench, and now it's over actually at the operating position, which I guess it means that it's finished, and I've got it hooked up to the solar panels, to my Volkswagen solar panels, which are held by suction cups into the southwest facing windows here at the M0HBR laboratories, and the solar panels go to a 12-volt gel cell. I've got no charge controllers at all in there. I've got, other than the diodes to keep the thing from draining, from sort of flowing in reverse back through the solar panels. You have to put a little diode in there. But the diodes actually were in there when I got the they were in the line from the solar panels when they came from Volkswagen. So I just clipped off the big cigarette lighter connector at the end, put on a couple of alligator clips, and I just hooked that thing up to the 12-volt gel cell. And it never generates enough current to, I think, to get the gel cell in trouble, but it does trickle charge it quite well. And then I have the 20 meter DSB rig hooked up to the gel cell with the solar panels in parallel. So I was thinking, I you know how these old radio stations used to have kind of a slogan. I mean, WOR in New York used to be that 50 kilo that it used to say that powerful station with the 50 kilowatt smile. I guess I could be M0HBR, homebrew double sideband with solar power from central London. Or M0HBR, solar powered double sideband from downtown London. The work getting to the website somehow. But I do think I'm probably the only, I think it's safe to say that I am the only solar powered double sideband station on the air in the world. And if anybody's out there who wants to contest that, please send me an email at n2cqr@arrl.net, and we can flip a coin. But I was playing with that, and then following up on some of the stuff that we did last week, just a few things. I listened to Radio Jove, the sounds from Jupiter that you sent me. Somebody sent me, and it was a little bit underwhelmed. I could hear it in there, but frankly, it didn't sound a whole lot different than all kinds of other static that we get here. I mean, I guess it's neat knowing that it's coming from Jupiter, but it seems like you'd go to a whole lot of trouble just to hear that. And it, I don't know. I was a little bit disappointed with Jupiter. Back to you, KL7R, M0HBR.
Kind of cool that the if you believe what they say is the mechanism for the radiation from Jupiter to get here, it's pretty impressive. There's some sort of a laser effect that goes between Jupiter and Io, and the laser. Io and Jupiter have to be lined up pointing at the Earth, and this thing kind of lasers at the Earth, and it's kind of impressive. I've heard it, and it sounds not a whole lot different than a solar storm swishing across the band, but it's kind of cool to know that it's coming from Jupiter. It's interesting that there's calendars out there that tell you when to expect signals, and we've just gone through a period where we could have heard them. I have to wait a little while longer. You had a note that said something about an interferometer using Pentek receivers. What's that about? I don't understand interferometers. Maybe you can tell me there. Over.
All right, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, because another listener, G Station. I'm going to try to dig up the call here when we bang the gong and go to solder smoke mailbag. But sent in the sent me the website on Radio Jove, and then he included in there a website about simple interferometers. And you know, the interferometer, the idea is with telescopes, for example, you take two telescopes at different points on the Earth with quite a bit of distance between them, and you point them at the same object in space, and the signal will be arriving at very slightly different times because of the distance between the two objects. And if you can combine the signals and keep track of the very slight phase difference caused by the distance between the two receivers, you effectively get a telescope of the size of the base between the two telescopes, if it makes it any sense. So they apply the same principle to radio astronomy. And this website, and it's the URL is intro.fringes, like on the fringe, intro.fringes, FRINGES.org, describes how to build simple amateur radio astronomy interferometers. That's enough to catch the interest of a solder smoker right there. But even the cooler part of it was that they're using Kentek direct conversion receivers, I think at about 20 megahertz. And I think it's, most of the work is focused on Jupiter. So I thought that was pretty cool. I used to be a member, Mike, of the, and this, I guess this is, if you could say this, that you are certifiably geeky, but I was once a member of SARA, S-A-R-A, the Society of Amateur Radio Astronomers. And it's an amazing group, and they're out there. There's not many of them, and I never got to the point where I actually built a radio telescope. But there are guys out there building radio telescopes, and I guess now including interferometer technology. And all I can say is I guess they're going for the real DX, Mike. KL7R M0HBR.
Oh wow. So if you had a Kentek rig and I had a Kentek rig, we could build an antenna the size of the Earth to listen to 20 meg signals there. that's pretty, one of my friends from way back when is it all used to be AL7EB. He's a big space guy and UHF guy. I think that's his call now. I think his call now is KL7UHF or something like that. He got a call something like that. Ed Cole. Been a while. He's got a SETI receiver. And I guess he might be one of the crew out there doing SETI with his own satellite dish, rather than just doing the number crunching. He's actually collecting data, so that's pretty cool stuff. There was another thing I was going to ask, but I forgot what it was. We had a day that wasn't actually raining here. August was one day without rain. It happened just at the right point where we didn't break a record, but it was really pouring. Today was a fairly nice day. Let's see, what else am I working on here? I got a whole bunch of notes. I've actually done quite a bit of stuff. Have you ever heard of a cootie key?
No. This you got to tell me. Tell me about this one. I haven't heard of this at all. Go ahead.
Well, apparently there's people out there trying to resurrect straight key night. They want to have straight key night be more than just one night a year where everybody gets on and runs straight keys. But anyway, you're allowed to run straight keys, bugs, and cootie keys. And I've never heard of a cootie key. It's basically mechanical keys. You can't run an electronic key. A straight key, you know what a straight key is. You just do dits and dahs by hand, and a bug is you push your thumb in and you get dits caused by an arm flapping back and forth mechanically, bouncing, making dits, and the dahs you make by tapping the daw with your finger on the other side of the bug. A kudiki is basically a bug without the dits. So you can push with your thumb and make dits, and you can push with your finger and make daws. And how is this better than a strakey? Well, the trick with a kudiki is that you make dits by going thumb finger, thumb finger, thumb finger, back and forth, and then to make daws, you would, you know, just whatever. If you happen to be on a thumb when it's daw time, or if you happen to be on a finger when it's daw time, you make your daws. But the dits, you just by slapping the kudiki back and forth, and apparently made out of hacksaw blades. So anyway, I wired up my bencher as a kudiki, and I sent CQ and sent a few pages of text, and it is frightful sounding, Bill. Over.
Oh, yeah, the sideswiper, the hacksaw blade. Yeah, it all comes back to me now. Well, you know, Mike, when I get on CW, every night is straight key night here. I've never graduated from the straight key. I guess it just... I fooled around one time with a Heathkit HD, I think it was HD 1410 or something like that, and for some reason just couldn't get into it. And then at one point I actually had a Vibraplex bug, but that was a terrible waste of hardware on me. And I think over the years it just the laws of entropy went to work on that thing, and it just kind of disintegrated. I left pieces of the Vibraplex bug are at work in the Dominican Republic right now, because a friend of mine there had a bug that had been given to him as a gift by a famous radio amateur named Fred Lau, and Fred's bug had lost some pieces over the years, so I gave my gave what remained of my Vibraplex to Gustavo, HIHG, down there in Santo Domingo. And anyway, I think so. My Vibraplex pieces live on in Santo Domingo, and I hope Gustavo is generating CW with them as we speak. But no, every night here is straight key night for me, and I have. I told you, I said recently I've been going back on to 20 CW with the HW8, but I'm basically a phone guy, Mike. And here comes the junior operator. Billy has just woke up. He's now joining me in the shack. Back to you, Mike, at KL7R and 0HBR.
Yeah. I heard about... Good morning, Billy. I heard about sideswipers, but I always thought that they were used with electronic keyers. I always thought you hitched the dits to the dit side and the dahs to the dah side, and it just wasn't iambic. It was just a sideswiper, right? I didn't realize that you used it to make a string of dits by flapping the thing back and forth. That was a new one to me. Let's see. I built a little. I've been crawling around inside of SM0VPO, Harry's website. Have you ever been on that site? Got a bunch of really good stuff in there, and I built a little half watt. Linear amplifier that's used push-pull twin 2222s. Five of them uses one as a driver, and then four of them in push-pull. Got that thing built and playing with it, and that's probably the last of the soldering I did there, Bill, but he's really got a bunch of good stuff on his site there. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah. And here's... Here's the XYL. Elisa arrives. So we've got, two, three quarters of the family here now, Mike. Everybody's waking up around the same time. I've seen Harry's site. Really good stuff. Very interesting. And I've been to that site many times over the years, but I just recently, I would usually turn to it when I was having problems with an RF amplifier stage, you know, around the point where I was thinking about sacrificing chickens to Papa Legba because I couldn't get the amplifier to get stable or to work right. So anyway, I would find a Harry's site there, and it was always inspirational because all of his amplifiers seem to the text with it seems to work seem to indicate that they work you know, without problems, without instability, you know, very stable. I've never built one, and I'm hoping that when I do, the jinx that seems to haunt my ham shack about RF amplifiers won't apply. Because some of those things, I mean, just when you look at them, I mean, stacking up all those 22-22s like that, and that's you know, that's been done before, and a lot of other folks have talked about doing that. But man, I don't know if it's hard enough to get one transistor to produce RF with stability and without breaking into oscillation. It just seems to me sometimes that stacking up a whole bunch of them like that is just, I don't know, asking for more trouble. But like I said, I hope I'm wrong. A KL7R and 0HPR.
Yeah, you don't know if he's fibbing or what. He seems to take great pleasure in using whatever he can find, toroids and ferrites. Not having a clue what their values are, he's, oh, I just grabbed a couple of cores out of some variable inductors and slapped them together with some super glue and called it a double core ferrite. And I had some junk box things here, and he talks about relative humidity and things like that as relating to how many turns and what the core permeabilities are. I think he'd get a little pleasure out of doing that. But yeah, this amp, he said this thing had no harmonics, no trash, nothing perfect from 1 megahertz to 30 flat gain. And I built it, and I got I didn't get those results over.
Yeah, I'm sure Harry did. I mean, he probably just has I guess the electronic equivalent of a green thumb, and but knowing the kind of the gremlins that lurk around my workbench, I think that I would probably be sacrificing chickens real fast if I tried to tried to do some of the stuff that Harry has done there. Whenever I think about building another RF amplifier stage, I find myself drifting into kind of commercial appliance operator territory a little bit, because that HF pack 5-watt amp that we talked about seems very attractive. I mean, it seems like they've got a good design, a good PC board layout, and a good good selection of transistor, a good set of toroids, and everything there. What you would need to, just to build a thing and have it work and not have to spend a week or 2 weeks chasing oscillations and parasitics and harmonics and all that. So, and what I might do is I might just buy one and then sort of use the parts and then make my own PC board, so I wouldn't feel bad about, violating the scratch-built homebrew ethics or work ethic. I'm sure you know what I mean. One thing I wanted to mention. It's not exactly melt and solder, but I'm sure you've seen on the on some of the homebrewing blogs, especially Make. I really like that Make blog, Makezine blog. They always have really good stuff there. I mean, I'm a big fan of Hackaday, but Make comes up with lots of stuff every day. So I think it's a much bigger operation. So instead of one entry every day like you have on the wonderful Hackaday site, Make will give you, five, six, seven new entries every day, and from a real diverse bunch of projects, really good stuff. But they've been talking about how to use simple kitchen pots and pans and colanders and strainers and stuff like that to make parabolic dishes for your Wi-Fi system, for the computer Wi-Fi systems. And I've been having a bit of trouble with the link between my computer and the router up here and my wife's computer, which is three floors below. It's not so much the distance, but there's a lot of stuff between the two transceivers. So I got the idea of instead of using a colander or a strainer to make a parabolic dish, I thought about just a simple corner reflector. So I had a little kind of aluminum cake pan that was here in the shack, and I just bent it into a corner. I took it down to my wife's computer. I put the little, what looks like a little thumb drive. It's not a thumb drive. It's actually the transceiver for the Wi-Fi system, and just sort of sticky taped it into the kind of close to the corner, and then I I just sat there and watched the signal strength as I moved this thing around, and man, I think I got a lot of gain from this thing, Mike. And it just serves as a simple corner reflector and just helps the RF get a little bit directional and has really increased the link between the two stations here. So there you go. That's my contribution to Wi-Fi technology. KL7RM 0HBR.
All right. Well, you know, I've experimented quite a bit with that stuff. I don't know if I told you, but they used to have they used to transmit HBO in Alaska on 2.4 gigahertz, which is now microwaves and Wi-Fi. But they had a thing in Alaska called Spectrum, I think they called it, and they transmit HBO, and there was these little kits to use a 1 pound coffee can to point at the HBO transmitter, and at the back of the 1 pound coffee can was a circuit that had basically a local oscillator to mix the 2.4 gigahertz down to some UHF channel your TV could pick up. And you could buy these kits in the back of magazines, and I built one, and so I was stealing HBO using this receiver, and it was all really cool. It had a little single like a surface mount transistor in there. It wasn't surface mount, but it was a 2.8 gigahertz frequency transistor, and that had strip lines and that were basically a dipole antenna. And I'd done some experimenting with that stuff, playing. I was gonna mention this anyway, but if people out there haven't looked, go to kl7r.ham-radio.ch. That's my homepage. And if you look at bookmarks, I keep my bookmarks on bookmarks.yahoo.com, and periodically I save them to that bookmark file. And so you can look at my bookmarks, and I've got a bunch of bookmarks in there on Wi-Fi antennas and Wi-Fi antenna shootouts and like that. I told one of my friends at work that he had his Wi-Fi access point in the basement. No, he had his Wi-Fi access like you did up in the top floor, and he had his Wi-Fi based MP3 player downstairs. And I told him about this site, and then after thinking about it, man, he just grabbed a pie pan and put it underneath his access point, and then he had all the gain he needed. Yeah, his access point was in the basement, and he put the pie pan under the access point, and that pointed upstairs three floors to where his MP3 player was, and he said he got plenty of bars. I used to have a lot of trouble here where my access point was in the living room, and I couldn't see it from the back room, and I built all kinds of parabolics and what have you. But take a look on that on my bookmarks there, and I've added a couple there. I added one just recently called it's a QAX article on why antennas radiate. It was over my head, but it was interesting to read there, Bill. M0 HBR KL7R.
KL7R M0 HBR. Yeah, Mike, this is really interesting stuff. We're getting into Captain Midnight territory, and next it'll be Blue Boxes and all that. Yeah, good stuff. It's always always fun to talk about the kind of the dodgy side of homebrew radio. It's always fun to hear about folks who I should say got kind of innovative there with the receive systems. And wow, yeah, I like all the coffee can antennas. That's great stuff. And thanks for pointing out there about the favorites, the URLs. We'll check that out. The old Wi-Fi and a whole new world. I like all the Wi-Fi shootouts and all that stuff here. Like the cake pan corner reflector seemed to worked out real well. I'm sorry, I kind of missed out on the whole blue box craze. It was happening when I was first getting into ham radio as a kid, I guess in the 70s, and it just seems real interesting. And I, at one point, I thought about sort of fooling around with that. On the one hand, it's probably good I didn't, because I might have gotten arrested. on the other hand, most of the people who were playing with that stuff, like Wozniak and others, seem to go on to become multi-billionaires. So I should have probably been trying to build that stuff instead of double sideband or direct conversion receivers. Let's see, Mike, do you think it's time to bang the gong for Solder Smoke Mailbag, KL7RM0HPR?
Yeah, let's do. I do want to say I had a couple of websites to recommend, and one was, like I say, my bookmark, but I recommend SM0VPO, Harry's site. He's got a thing on there on basic linear amplifier, about class A, B, C, and stuff like that. That's worth it. And I found a site just recently, Papa Golf One Norway's site. His name's Martin, and he's got a really nice looking site. It's got a bunch of QRP stuff and receivers and things like that. That'd be fun for like Elmering and just if you're into receivers. Those are the main things I wanted to mention, Bill. Bang a gong.
Yeah, but there's one other thing I wanted to mention first, and that's the picture of your workbench that you sent, which I thought was really neat in all senses of the word. A cool looking position there, operating position workbench, Mike. And it's great to see where all the inventions and innovations from KL7R are actually coming from. So we've got to figure out a way. I think that's on your website, and people should take a look at it. I was made jealous by looking at it in many different ways. It's on the website under Journal. Check that out, and you can see where KL7R does his solder melting. I thought it was really neat. It reminded me that I desperately need a really good soldering station, temperature controlled. I'm in the dark ages. I'm in the 1950s here. For a while, I was using one of these arrangements where you have a little switch that switches in a diode and drops the voltage down from 120 down to 60 and just cools it off a little bit like that. But we need to be more sophisticated. I go through soldering tips with shocking speed here, Mike, and it's because the thing is sitting there cooking all the time. Anyway, I've got to move ahead. I think that's my next area for improvement on the workbench. A good soldering station. So I think I need to get going on that. You can't be a solder smoke generator without a decent soldering iron. I still have the Weller soldering gun that I have here. I've had it since 1973, so I think I got my money's worth from that one. All right, so everybody should check out that picture of your site. All right, here we go. Stand by. It's time to bang the solder smoke mailbag gong. Welcome to Solder Smoke Mailbag. All right, we got some really nice feedback this week. I hope I'm going to mention everybody. I don't think I am, because I have email coming in on different addresses. And so if I missed anybody this week, I'll try to pick them up next week. But this morning, just as I walked into the shack, we got a very inspirational email from George, KJ6VU, from Silicon Valley. Always a cool place to get email from if you're in the electronics area. And George tells us that he listened to Solder Smoke while flying from Osaka back to California. So I think that's one of the more exotic locations for listening to Solder Smoke that we've had so far. 35,000 feet over the Pacific, coming in from Japan to Silicon Valley. So thanks for the nice note there, George. Jack, Golf 3, Papa Victor Golf, sent us a nice note commenting on some of Farhan's work there in India with the BidX 20 and the IRF 510 amplifiers that go with it. Always always interested in hearing about that. And thanks for the note, Jack. Joe, W0MQY, out there in Kansas, has been listening to Solder Smoke and sent us a nice note talking about a scale that he has for converting power figures from dBm to other values, and he found that very interesting. And today we've been talking about Jupiter and interferometers, and I just realized that the guy who told us about that was Patrick, Kilo Foxtrot 4, Lima Mike Zulu. He's the one who sent us the information on Radio Jove and the Tentec direct conversion interferometers. Good stuff. So thanks to all our listeners and all the folks who've written in, and we really like to get the email, and we'll do our best to mention your messages on the not on the air, but on the fiber optic cable, I guess. So send them in, and you can send them to N2CQR at ARRL.net, and I'll relay all of them to Mike. So please send them in. We'd love to hear from our listeners. Now back to you, Mike. KL7R M0HBR.
All right, Bill. We covered some ground today, but I think we got most of it covered. I'm gonna be building a who knows what I'm gonna be doing, but I'm planning to build a beacon for 10.140. I ordered some crystals out of Germany. Guy has some for sale there. Christian DL1JAN. If somebody needs some 10.140, he's apparently got hundreds. He's afraid though that the good intention, the QRPers, will get 10.140s and turn that into the new QRP calling frequency, thereby polluting the QRSS spectrum there. There's 100 hertz worth of spectrum that those guys use that would be best not polluted. anyway, I ordered some crystals. Going to make a beacon. Well, I guess I'll save 73 for now, Bill. Who knows what will come up with next week there. Best to you and your family. 73 from Juneau, M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR, yeah. I guess that's a problem. Yeah. I guess you'll have to get everyone who buys the crystals to to promise to use them only at QRSS. I think it's a pretty cooperative group, so they should be able to work something out there. Yeah, Mike, well, great. Good one, and have a good evening. And we'll talk again then next week. And thanks to all the listeners for tuning in on the MP3 players, CD-ROM drives, and computer sound cards out there. Have a good evening, Mike, and talk again real soon. KL7R, 73 from M0HBR.